Welcome to Slapshot Podcast, episode number 9. I'm your host, Chris Ramirez. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. It's still afternoon. Yeah, it's 5 p.m. It's a good time. I know I said I would do this regularly on a Monday, but it's not a lie. It's just easier for me to do it on Wednesday. So if all goes according to plan, which it hasn't, I should be able to do an episode every Wednesday, barring sickness, barring any other life things that may happen. I should be able to get to one every Wednesday. As always, let's start with the podcast places you can follow it, right? You can follow the podcast directly on Twitter at Slapshot Podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at FuzzyChris91. Obviously, you can get the podcast on Spotify. You can get it on Apple Podcasts. You can get it on Stitcher. You can get it on the YouTubes. You can also get it on Podbean. Yes, you can get it on Podbean. Did I forget any? I don't think I forgot any. So that's where you can do it. Check it out. Subscribe. Rate the podcast, please. I enjoy that. So today we're going to focus on Taylor Hall. Because a lot of talk has been about where Taylor Hall will be traded to. Because it's almost certain that he's not going to sign in New Jersey. Because he is not signing up for whatever trash is going on with them. He's tired of losing. We know this. He spent years in Edmonton being on a terrible team. He was traded to New Jersey. They are disarray. They're just not a good hockey team. I can't see him wanting to sign there long term when he clearly wants to be part of a team that goes to the playoffs. So there's a good chance that he's going to get traded somewhere. We're going to break down where he might go. Before we get to that, we're going to get to Jim Montgomery, because if you've been sleeping under a rock, then you may have missed that the Dallas Stars fired their head coach, Jim Montgomery, citing unprofessional conduct. Now, Jim Nill did hold a press conference, and he was very, very vague into what happened. What we do know is that Jim Montgomery did not respect the core values and beliefs of the Dallas Stars and the National Hockey League. Did he tell us what those core values were? No. But this is also a team that's owner openly criticizes his two best players and calls them horse shit. So I can't imagine what these core values must be. But obviously, it was bad enough that he needed to be fired. And he did stay, because at first, this kind of shocked everybody. Because let's understand the context here. The Dallas Stars got off to a miserable start. They didn't fire their coach. Now they're 17-11-3, I think, on the season, which is respectable. They've played some really good hockey in November, and they've started December off well. And all of a sudden, now you can the coach. So this decision, obviously, with everything that's been going on in the NHL, our first assumption was, well, what player did he physically or verbally abuse? And now Neil came out and stated, he said, this has nothing to do with abuse of a player, either current or former, which kind of catches everybody off guard pretty quick there. You're saying, okay, there's no connection, like I said. So the quote was, no, not a quote, but he did say here that there was, it's not a criminal act. There's no connection to past or present players and did not involve another employee of the team. So he clearly did something that has nothing to do with anybody else, but just enough to get fired. Now, when you hear this, my first thought was, okay, well, if you didn't hurt a player, you didn't verbally abuse one, you didn't abuse staff or whatnot, like, what could you have done that would get you fired off a team? So my first thought is, well, did he start gambling on his own team? Who knows? We may never find out. Hopefully we do. And Jim Nill did nothing to, you know, calm our curiosity here by not telling us anything. He didn't elaborate. He just said that it did not match with the core values, that he spoke to general counsel. They all agreed that he should be fired. Perfect. Which is, I mean, it is what it is, but whatever. DFS players are going to be real happy, because this only means that maybe, right, interim coach Rick Bowness I don't know if I'm saying that right, but anyway, it doesn't matter. Maybe he will have some lines that are A, not changing every 10 minutes, and B, do not involve Justin Dowling playing on the top line. Maybe. Who knows? It didn't show yesterday, right? Devils played. The Devils were, I think they were in Dallas or vice versa. Anyways, Dallas beat the Devils. Everybody beats the Devils, but they beat them. So that's kind of nice. Tyler Seguin's still on the wing. You know, Jamie Benn's got his spot. Anyways, I don't know what happened. I wish they would have said it. They haven't. We're going to find out at some point. Somebody's going to get to the bottom of whatever happened here. My bet is on probably something illegal in terms of gambling. It just feels like something that you would fire an employee for, betting on your own team. Jim Nill didn't want to talk about it, which is fine, right? I wish that he would have, but he didn't. He did state, like I said, that it has nothing to do with an abuse of a player or employee, either past or present. So at least that's good, right? Gary Bettman was aware, apparently, and the Dallas Stars apparently did their own internal investigation before they're doing this. So again, this didn't come out of nowhere. They did go through the process of whether they should fire him or not. They chose to do it. Will the Dallas Stars be a playoff team come April? No idea, but they're off to it. They've corrected their terrible start to the season, and hopefully they do make the playoffs because they're a decent team. They deserve some nice things in Dallas, right? So yeah, I have my money on, no pun intended, but I have my money on Jim Montgomery getting fired because he bet on his own team. But maybe one day we'll find out. If we don't, that's where I'm leaving my money. Perfect. Now let's get to Taylor Hall. So we're going to look at now four or five teams. I think I'm going to talk about five. Five teams that there's a legitimate chance that he ends up in. And let's not forget, right? He wants to play. He stated, right? He hasn't signed an extension in Dallas because he just wants to see the direction of where the team is going. The direction that this team is going, right? The Devils are going down the toilet. They're a miserable hockey team. I don't think they figure it out. PK Subban was mocked by Grimaldi, where he doesn't look like himself. He does not look like a $9 million player. This team does not look good. Nico Hischier is hurt. Hughes is just, it hasn't been a really good start to his NHL career. This team is destined to finish last. They're going to start selling off some pieces and trying to get whatever they can. And that's fine. Ray Sherrill is going to do a great job of, you know, acquiring pieces that he needs to make this team better. But they're still in a rebuilding process. Taylor Hall does not want anything to do with that. And even if they were to throw a whole bunch of money at him, I doubt that he stays. I really do. So let's start with the obvious here. The obvious fit for Taylor Hall is Colorado. And there's a number of reasons why. A, Colorado does have some cap space. They can get it done. They have their first round pick, which gets it done as well. They probably have some players that they can move, right, and pieces to get that deal done. What's important, what I want to stress here is not just, I don't think Taylor Hall is just going to go somewhere for the pleasure of going somewhere. He would be a pure rental, I feel like, in Colorado, which is fine because Colorado is in a win now mode, right? Win now. And they can win now. This team has the pieces to get it done. I expect them to be able to get it done. And if you can add a player like Taylor Hall, I mean, that's pretty good, right? That's really, really, really good. This takes them to a whole other level. This could solidify the second line, which obviously Colorado has a great top line. The rest of their team is a little, you're just like, you know, they could use some depth. That's what I'm saying here. They can use some depth. So Colorado is the obvious fit here. Can they get this deal done? I do. Joe Sakic, he took some heat at the beginning in the Matt Duchene deal, and that worked out real well for his team. Okay, let's understand that. There are some people giving him heat, saying he didn't know what he was doing, blah, 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 and he ended up figuring all that out. So he could definitely figure out how to acquire Taylor Hall and not mortgage the future, okay? Because like I said, he has a first-round pick this year. You could probably attach a first-round pick next year should you sign him. And there's a legitimate possibility that they can. Their current cap space right now, right, is about $9.4 million. Again, Cap Friendly is going to give me all these numbers. Their deadline cap space is going to be $27 million. They got, like I said, they have the money to get this done. The reason they have the money to get this done is because, right, Gabriel Landeskog signed at 5.5. McKinnon signed at 6.3. Mika Rantanen's deal is 9.25. But they don't really have their core of players, including Nazem Kadri at 4.5. They're locked up. Only Gabriel Landeskog becomes a UFA after the 21-22 season, at the end of that season. In the short term, for next year, the only UFA coming up is Matt Nieto, right? Then they got some RFA contracts, Tyson Joe, Snitushkin, Burakovsky, Zadorov, Ryan Graves. Like, they don't have massive deals. None of these players are really looking for a massive upgrade in money, okay? So they have... they do have the salary to get it done. They're going to have $22 million of projected cap space entering next season. So you have the money to sign him, should you want to do that, without having to mortgage the rest of the future. And if they're in a win-now mode, right? McKinnon's already stated that, you know, he may leave some money on the table come the end of his contract because he wants to win with this group. Fine. You figure it out when you get there. You know, Gabriel Landeskog still has 2 years left on his deal. Who knows how much money he's going to make? He's going to make more than 5.5, but is he going to get like 9 million? Probably not. And then you have, which is the essential part here, right? So Samuel Girard's contract kicks in $5 million next year, right? He's making the rookie, right? His rookie deal is ending this season. You have Cale Makar, which signed for $880 for the next two seasons. He becomes an RFA at the end of the 21-22 season. Right, Zadorov's probably not going to make a ton of money. You don't have to give him the book's worth of it. Mark Barbario's a UFA at the end of next season. So there's not a lot. They have the opportunity right now. The window is open if they wanted to make a deal to run after the Stanley Cup and see if they can win it. And this team can, by the way. They have the pieces up front. I really think they do. They're as complete a hockey team as you'll find when everybody is healthy. I think Nazem Kadri really balances out that second line. If you could add a talented winger like Taylor Hall with him, like, let's not forget, Kadri can score goals. Like, he scored over 30 goals his last year in Toronto. So he can get this done. And by adding a player like Taylor Hall at that point, you've solidified a top six that can score goals. And then you can, right, Jonas Donskoy has played super well as well. So that gives you a really nice top six. Valeri Nichushkin is scoring some goals as well. And then you can rotate the bottom six as you want. Burakovsky is still there. He can score goals as well. This is a really solid team. Their defense is still young, but they can definitely win a Stanley Cup with the players that are there. So that's the most logical place for him to end up. Will he end up in the most logical place? Probably not. But I want to see this happen. It should happen as well. But, you know, we'll figure that out when we get there. The next team that I think he could end up in, and there's been talk about it. I think Darren Dreger talked a little bit about it. Kind of threw everybody off guard here, but I mean, anything is possible, is the Arizona Coyotes. Now, the Coyotes technically have no cap space. Zero. They have none, which this completely threw me off guard because I just assumed that the Coyotes don't spend to the cap. They basically have contracts that are there. They have, right, their long-term injury reserve is being used right now. They're expected to have about $2.6 million available at the deadline. They do have first-round picks available, right? They have some players coming off the books in 2021 who are going to need contract in 2020, 2021. But I don't know why Taylor Hall would want to go to this team. I don't. And not that I don't understand why. I understand that they're a decent team, Arizona. Let's understand this properly. They're a decent team. They're in a division that's kind of a little bit wide open right now, right? They have the same record as of today, Wednesday. They have the same record as the Edmonton Oilers. So they could technically be first in the Pacific Division. The Flames have actually not been that great of a hockey team. The Vegas Golden Knights have been a letdown. You know, Vancouver is still there. I don't know if, again, I don't know if they have what it takes to make the playoffs. The San Jose Sharks are trash. The Anaheim Ducks are trash. The LA Kings are barely a hockey team. So if you eliminate 6, 7, and 8, San Jose, Anaheim, and LA, you have five teams who can compete for the top three spots in that Pacific division. How good are the Edmonton Oilers? Are they for real? I don't know. But they're, as of right now, they're tied for the lead. So Arizona has a good team. They don't necessarily score a ton of goals. So I could see the interest in them wanting to acquire a player like Taylor Hall. That would give them a really nice, they could balance it out as they want. Maybe they'll get Phil Kessel off the third line, have those two play together. It's a possibility. Selling hockey as well in Arizona, that could be good as well. You get another top winger coming over, which is nice. Playing hockey in the desert, I'm assuming, is amazing. You don't have to deal with, you know, the garbage that comes with having reporters asking questions and this and that, and your team sucks. Like, nobody knows that the team is doing well or not in Arizona. Like, I'm, my apologies to the 42 Arizona Coyote fans, but let's be honest here, okay? So there's an opportunity for him at that point to be there. The one reason why I don't think this deal happens, okay, is because their projected cap space at the beginning of 2021 is under $1 million. Like, how are you going to sign him? And Arizona is not, are they in a win now mode? Like, who knows? Do they really think they have a chance at winning the Stanley Cup? That's for them to decide at that point, right? That's for them as an organization to decide if they have a legitimate chance at winning, and do you want to mortgage some of your future? Like, is this team happy just making the playoffs, winning maybe a round if you're lucky, making some money, and then just being like, well, at least we didn't lose as much, right? They're a good team. They could use a Taylor Hall, but I don't see how this team is really in the conversation. I don't. Maybe they've checked in, right? Like I said, I'm pretty sure it's Darren Dreicher who talked about it. It was like, hey, you know, they're looking at least, which is fine. You can call and see what it wants. There's, you know, they definitely have some players that they can move if they wanted to get this done. But I don't think it happens here. I don't see it happening with the Arizona Coyotes. But who knows? The third team that they've talked about, and I don't think this happens at all, okay, is the Edmonton Oilers. I cannot see a scenario where Taylor Hall goes back to Edmonton. First of all, it's not going to be for Larson one for one. We can guarantee you that. Second of all, this team is, again, my assumption here is Taylor Hall wants to at least be on a team that's going to make the playoffs and have a chance at winning the Stanley Cup. Okay. And playing with Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl will do wonders for your career. Okay, just as Zach Cassian, who I think he has 11 goals on the season. Like, he's having a really good season because he plays next to Connor McDavid and sometimes Leon Draisaitl. So that's nice for those two players. They could use all the depth possible. Okay, because James Neal has kind of cooled off a little bit, which is fine. And that bottom nine, right, even that second line when Draisaitl's not on it, is just, this team is not going anywhere. Like, they'll make the playoffs maybe, and then they'll get ransacked in the first round. The other reason why I don't think he's going to want to go back there, they have a lot of UFAs at the beginning of 2021, okay? Are they important names? Not really, okay? Sam Gagne, Zach Cassian, Marcus Granlund, and then you got a whole bunch of who knows what, right? Patrick Russell, Riley Sheahan, Josh Archibald. This team is probably going to go through a transition. Like, they're going to change a lot over the course of the next 12 months. Does Taylor Hall really want to embark himself on a long-term, or even just, I don't think he goes to Edmonton as a rental because I don't think they have the pieces to get that trade done. So probably a sign in, or maybe with a kind of outside chance that they say, okay, you know, if he signs here, maybe. They do have $24 million free as of next season. So they have the money to give him the long-term deal if he wants it. Does he want to go back to Edmonton? I don't know. Ask him. But Again, I think there's a better chance he signs in Arizona than he does in Edmonton. I just feel like he's been there. I don't know if he wants to go back. I mean, he's a good player. He's getting a little bit older, right? So, but he's still going to get this money. He deserves it in some sense. And somebody, like I said, somebody's going to give him the money that he wants. Somebody. I don't know who yet. But as a rental, I don't think Edmonton is going to go out and make that deal. I also don't think that he signs there long term. I don't think so, but who knows? Here's the fourth team that I want to talk about. And this team, I could see it happening, and I would like to see it happen. The Carolina Hurricanes. The Carolina Hurricanes are an actual good team. Like, they're not one of those teams where you're like, oh, man, they're just having a little bit of success. No, they're a good hockey team. They're in a really, really tough metropolitan division. And that has always been the case, with the exception of the Rangers, Blue Jackets, and Devils, who are, I mean, again, nothing wrong with those teams. They're not in a contention to make the playoffs, okay? You have the Washington Capitals, who are on fire, okay? The Islanders are a defensive juggernaut. The Flyers are good as well. The Hurricanes are there as well. And let's not forget the Pittsburgh Penguins, okay? Let's not forget them. So, of those teams, right, you're going to have three that are going to make the playoffs, and then you have a wild card set. You could have five teams from the Metropolitan Division make the playoffs. It wouldn't surprise anybody. That's currently how it's set up. If you look at the playoff picture as of right now, Washington, the New York Islanders, the Philadelphia Flyers hold the 1-2-3 spot in the Metropolitan Division. The Hurricanes hold the first wild card spot. The Penguins hold the second wild card spot. So there's a possibility that we see five teams from the Metro Division make the playoffs. The Washington Capitals are what they are. They're a very complete hockey team, okay? And the Islanders are just, they're a defensive juggernaut. This team is defense first, and then they just score goals. They have, I don't know what the record is, because I don't have the number on me, but they are ridiculously good when they score three or more goals. Like, they don't lose hockey games. When they score three goals, just pack it up, go home, that's it. The Islanders have scored. Nothing's going to happen. The Flyers being good is a surprise, but they're there. They're there, so give them some credit. The Carolina Hurricanes, to me, are the team that they're just missing just a little bit. They're missing that one extra, just that one player that pushes them over the edge. And a Taylor Hall will do that for you. He will push you over to the next level. I really do. Let's look at it from an actual perspective here, okay? So you got Svechnikov, Jordan Staal, Fogle on the top line. I don't even know if I'm saying his name right. Doesn't really matter. He has no business being there, okay? Your first line needs some help. Your second line is Nino Niederreiter, Sebastian Aho, Tuukka Teravainen. That is a really good second line. Really, really good. They could be a first line anywhere. They're probably the first line on this team. Daily Faceoff has them set up as a second line. Doesn't matter. Your third line here, okay, Ryan Dzingo, Lucas Walmart, Martin Nekas, that's a good third line as well. And then your fourth line rotated as you wish, okay? Doesn't matter. Let's not forget as well, Eric Hall is out of the lineup so far. He would probably take the third line center spot, and that team, again, you have a top nine that's really good. And then just rotate your bottom, you know, your fourth line as you would. Have your Brock McGinns and your Julian Gauthier's in and out of the lineup. Doesn't matter, right? Taylor Hall next to Svechnikov and Staal gives you a top nine that is elite. Really, really elite. They lack some skill down the center position after Aho. I don't think Jordan Staal is a legit one center or two center. Okay, Eric Hall does what he can do. That's fine. But I really do think that adding a winger to that, Svechnikov he's a legit NHL player. Like, he can score with the best. We haven't even seen his potential yet. He hasn't even gone to the peak of what he can do. Teravainen is just like, Sebastian Aho, I think he has, what, like 101 goals now in the NHL in his career? Teravainen's assisted on half of them. So those two are just, Like, they play well together. Bonnie and Clyde would be proud. Nino Niederreiter can score some goals as well. Ryan Dezingle can move up in the lineup if he needs to. They just have, they're missing that winger on the top line. And I think, or not even that I think, I know Taylor Hall can solve that problem. It's a question as well as, does he want to go there? And again, if he's looking to sign with a team that's going to be playoff competitive, you know, this is the guy who can get it done. Their core is locked up as well long term, right? Aho is there for a while. Jordan Stahl's there for a while. Tara Vinen's there for a while. I'll consider Niederreiter as well, part of the core as well. He's the first contract that comes up in 2022-23, right? Their core as well for next year, only Eric Hall is a UFA up front. That's it. Then you got Joel Edmondson on defense, Trevor Van Riemsdyk. Those guys are UFAs at the end of the year, at right 2020-2021. You got Hayden Fleury as well, is going to need some money. Dougie Hamilton's going to need some money when his contract, you know, he's a UFA in 2021-22. But for the most part, like, this team is set. I don't know if they have the goaltending to get it done, but you deal with that at another time. Justin Foulkes, they have some retained salary that's holding there. And the most important part of this, and I can't stress it enough, okay, Patrick Marleau is on the buyout here at $6.25 million. That money comes off the cap as of next season. So you've found $6.25 million. They have projected $18 million in cap space as of next season. 18. That's a lot of money. The cap hasn't gone up yet. So let's say the cap goes up by, I don't know, let's say $1.5 million. Then you got $7.7 million that you can invest in Taylor Hall if he wants. He's going to get more, but that's free money. It's house money, okay? And let's not forget, Carolina still has Alexander Semin's buyout on their contract at $2.3 million this year, $2.3 million next year. So some money's going to free up after that as well. That's the good news here, okay? Do they have the prospects to get it done as well? I do. I do think they have what it takes in terms of prospects to get a deal done if they absolutely want it. Obviously, Ryan Suzuki is probably the player that they're going to want to look at there. But in terms of, can they make this deal work? Yes. Should they make this deal work? Absolutely. Because they are a good team, Carolina. They're one piece away. They're one piece away. They're going to have about $4.7 million of deadline cap space available. You know, Don Waddell he knows what he's doing. Rob Brendamore is a pretty good coach. I could see Taylor Hall wanting to go play there as well with this group of players that are there. And the most important, I think this is the one as well that kind of might lean to where New Jersey would say, okay, well, we can make a deal here. Carolina has two first-round picks this year, right? They have Toronto's first-round pick from taking on that Patrick Marleau deal. They have three third-round picks. They have their pick. They have Buffalo's pick in the third round. They have a conditional, I think, as well. Or is it conditional? It is. If Adam Fox, here, let me read this. If Adam Fox plays 30 games in the 2019-20 season, the third-round pick will be upgraded to a 2020 second-round pick. Okay, so let's backtrack here a little bit. So, thank you again. What did we do before, like, Cap Friendly showed up? How did we know what was going on in life? Anyway, so Adam Fox is clearly going to play over 30 games in 2019-2020. That is going to become a second-round pick, okay? Sorry, I'm just reading here. And the Leafs conditional pick here, if the Leafs pick is a top 10 in 2020, the Hurricanes will receive Toronto's 2021 pick in the first. Okay, no, Toronto's going to make playoffs, blah, blah, blah. Or I don't know if they, anyways, it's not going to be a top 10 pick. So they're going to have two first round picks this year. They're most likely going to have two second round picks. They're going to have two third round picks. They have their fourth round pick as well. So they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 picks in the first four rounds. So if New Jersey's rebuilding, which let's face it, they are, they're going to want to collect a player, probably a prospect, and you're going to want to collect picks. And Carolina has the picks. that they can move. They can move their pick. They can move Toronto's pick. They could move both if they wanted, and they could maybe throw in, you know, their own pick in the second round. You've packaged three picks with a prospect, and that would probably get you a Taylor Hall. Probably. Who knows? And then they could easily re-sign him, and you're pretty much set after that. Because, again, I do believe that Taylor Hall is going to want to be traded somewhere where he can sign long-term and at least have a chance at making the playoffs every year. And until those, you know, those contracts start hitting in, right? Until the RFAs start needing some money, right? The Svechnikovs of the world and stuff. He's an RFA 2021-22. So you have a window where you can decide what happens. And like I said, this they're a good team. I think Carolina's a good team. I think they can. I think the window for them to win is possibly right now. They can compete with some of the best teams in the league in the Eastern Conference. They play in the hardest division in hockey right now. And they're doing pretty well. They're doing pretty well. They may end up in a wild card spot just because their division is so good. This is a team that can get stuff done. So I do believe that if he's not going to Colorado, I have to believe Carolina's on the telephone going, okay, how do we make this work? How do we make this work? I don't know, but it's possible. Okay, another team here that I don't know if they have a chance, but I think you could sell it pretty easy to him. That's the Florida Panthers. Like, the Florida Panthers are one of those teams that I don't know if they're, I don't know what they are. They're in a playoff spot right now, okay? And they went out to get some pieces to get it done. And, you know, they went out to get their Bobrovsky. And they have their first round pick. They have their second round pick. They don't have a ton. They have some RFAs coming up next year. But outside of that, right, Mike Hoffman's contract 2020-2021 is a UFA, so he's going to maybe want a little bit more money, or maybe, I don't know, whatnot. Evgeny Dodonov's contract comes up as well. So there's some money that's coming off the books here, okay? There's some money that's coming up, and there's players who are going to need to be re-signed. You could re-sign these players. Yeah, you could. Or you could give... You could, if you wanted to, like I said, trade for Taylor Hall. They're going to have $2.4 million of deadline cap space. They only have about $500,000 of projected cap space right now. Again, they're going to have about $17 million of projected cap space entering next season. So they have some money. They do. And they have some prospects that if they wanted to, they could move. And that's a really important part here for people to remember. They have the prospects. So if you don't have the picks, again, it's going to depend on which one you want to give up. If you have to give up more than one. I don't know if New Jersey's going to want a player under contract. I don't know if they'd take somebody like... I don't think they'd take somebody like Mike Hoffman. I don't think they'd take someone like Evgeny Dodonov. I don't... Like I said, I don't know. I wouldn't. Maybe they'll ask for a Vincent Trocheck in the back, but again, you know, New Jersey has centermen, so I don't know. Here's the reason why I think Florida could be a good match, though. Jonathan Huberdeau is locked up for four more years at 5.9, okay? Alexander Barkov's locked up as well at 5.9 for another three seasons. Those are your two best players on the team. Okay, Keith Yandel still has a whole bunch of money that's owed to him. Aaron Ekblad's getting overpaid. But, like, the core of that offense, right? Again, Dodonov and Hoffman, you can re-sign them if you want, or you could let both of them go or sign one. I think Brett Connolly has done pretty well. Okay, and he's at a $3.5 million cap hit. Is he legit? I don't know. Frank Vetrano is the player who interests me here. Because he can definitely play top 6 minutes. He's still signed for another three seasons at 2.53. And he could be that player who completes the top six. He could. I really think that he could. If he's given the opportunity on a regular basis, he could be really good. So, yeah. They have their defense with Ekblad and Yandel. You know, Strawman's making a lot of money as well, but I mean, that for that, it's kind of set. So their defense is good. Their forwards are really good. And they have Bobrovsky in net now until forever. So the pieces are there to get things done. I know that they have some money that's tied up in cap penalties with Roberto Luongo retiring. The buyout of Scott Darling, you know, they're on the hook for 2.3 next season. They retain some salary in the Jason Demers trade. So they have some money that's kind of locked up in garbage, but they still have $17 million available as of next season to do things, and the cap hasn't gone up yet. So again, there is an opportunity here for this team to do something if they wanted to. And because they're in a division, right? The Atlantic Division is kind of, it's not as locked up as people think it is. Outside of the Boston Bruins, who are the unstoppable, okay? The Buffalo Sabres are second in the Atlantic Division. So hold on to your hats here. Are they legit? I don't know. The Panthers are third. Then you have, right, you have the Montreal Canadiens, who are there at third. You have the Toronto Maple Leafs there at fourth. The Tampa Bay Lightning are there as well. Let's just even forget that Ottawa and Detroit exist, okay? Because Ottawa's not making the playoffs. Detroit is barely an NHL team, okay? So we can agree that the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Toronto Maple Leafs have been let down so far this year. They're not where they should be. Not where they should be. They're, I mean, if you look at it, Florida has two games in hand on Toronto. Tampa Bay has one game in hand on the Panthers. So that's still wide open. The Leafs have their team, right? They have what it is. They should be playing better. They haven't. I don't know if they figured it out. I don't know how legit Buffalo is down the stretch, but I could see either one of Tampa Bay or Toronto not making the playoffs. I don't even know if Montreal is a playoff team at that point. Because it starts to get really crowded in the Atlantic Division. Real crowded. It's real tight now, okay? Between Tampa Bay, Toronto, Montreal, Florida, and Buffalo, there are 3 points that separate them. Again, let's forget the Ottawa Senators exist. Detroit's an AHL hockey team, okay? Boston is going to run away with the division. They're too good at that point. Unless they stumble down the stretch, which again, they would have to really stumble down the stretch in order for it to care. The Atlantic Division is still wide open for 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And because the Metropolitan Division is so good, and I do think 5 teams will come out of there, you need to win. You need to finish 1, 2, 3 in the Atlantic to make the playoffs. There will be no wild card team coming out of the Atlantic Division. None. So again, let's assume for just shits and giggles here, okay? Let's say Buffalo doesn't make the playoffs. Let's say Florida misses it as well. Well, then you have only 2 of Tampa Bay, Toronto, Montreal making the playoffs. Let's assume we actually think the Florida Panthers can make it, and they could. Then you would have only 1 team of Tampa Bay, Toronto, Montreal making the playoffs. There is a lot going on there. And I think Florida, if they want to be a team that says we can do this, we can win, we can go farther. We went out, we signed Bobrovsky, we threw money at him to come here. Like, you didn't throw money at him just to, you know, show up here and not do anything. This is a team that probably wants to make the playoffs and do something. And Dale Tallon is a genius, and Joel Quenneville is there. He's pretty good at what he does. This is a team that can do stuff. They can win. So I think it's an outside shot here, but I wouldn't rule Florida out of this Taylor Hall sweepstakes. And the last team I want to talk about is obviously the Montreal Canadiens, right? Because why wouldn't you talk about them in a Taylor Hall sweepstakes, right? Can you convince him to come here? Who knows? It's going to be a hard sell. It's going to be a hard sell as well because Montreal's missed the playoffs 4 out of 5 years. So you're going to try to convince a player to come here on a team that hasn't really made the playoffs very often. I know they missed the playoffs by, 2 points last season, which is, you know, that's nice, but you still haven't made the playoffs. And again, that's going to be a hard sell to sign him long-term. The good news is here, okay, Montreal is all this money floating around doing nothing, okay? They are projected to have, they currently have a cap space of $6.4 million. Okay, their projected cap rate right now is $4 million. They're going to have $18 million available of deadline cap space. 18. So they can obviously go get them. Okay. The second part is most of the nucleus doesn't cost much. Okay. Doesn't. Thomas Tatar is making 4.8. He's the most expensive player who's not injured right now in terms of a forward. Okay. Jonathan Drouin makes the most money of all the forwards at 5.5. Paul Byron is a $3.4 million cap hit. OMFG. But apart from that, Brendan Gallagher has the friendliest team deal at $3.7 million cap hit. Okay. Max Domi's an RFA next season. He's going to want a little bit of money. It's fine. You have Philip Deneau at $3 million for another 2 years. Joel Armia at $2.6 million for another 2 years. And Joel Armia has played well. He's done what he needs to do. He's probably going to want to raise. Philip Deneau is going to need a little bit of money. Max Domi is going to need money. Brendan Gallagher is going to need a lot of money. Like, this is a team that's going to change a little bit. And by a little bit, I mean, a lot. Shea Weber makes his money and whatnot. Carey Price makes his money and whatnot. That's it. There's money that's going to be able to come off the cap at that point. Dale Weiss is not going to be re-signed. Okay, let's forget that. Keith Kincaid absolutely bombed. Steve Mason, remember Steve Mason, who they got Joel Armia for free because they took on that deal from Winnipeg. His money comes off the cap as well. So Montreal's going to have a projected $14 million in cap space next season. 14. They're going to sign some players, blah, 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 blah. They're probably going to have about the same $7, $8 million free that they've had for a million years now. Okay. I expect the cap to go up. If it goes up again by 1.5, brings you to $83 million. Montreal's going to spend to the cap. Trust me, Jeff Molson has the pockets to do it. And Marc Bergevin, I think, has to at some point realize that he needs his team to make the playoffs. You can't keep missing the playoffs in Montreal and not expect something bad to happen to you, or to not get fired. And I don't think it's firing Claude Julien. I know they've gone through that stretch where they can't win hockey games. You know, they beat the Penguins last night, which was nice. You know, they face off against Ottawa tonight, Wednesday. Definitely a winnable game against Ottawa. Every game against Ottawa, though, is tough. So we'll see about that. But there's a legit opportunity here for Marc Bergevin to go out, get a winger, get a talented winger. Okay, not to say that Drouin can't, but you can literally go out and get a good winger to play with Max Domi. Nothing wrong with Joel Armia, but you can put Armia, Kotkaniemi, and Drouin together. And I know, you know, Suzuki's trying to find a spot in the lineup. I know that's, I don't want to take that spot away from him, right? But it is what it is at this point, right? Ryan Poehling as well, that's another spot. Maybe you'll have to move one or the other. I don't know how willing I would be to move either Poehling or Suzuki. Less Suzuki than Poehling. But who knows what it takes to get that deal done. But I know, or at least I hope, that at least Bergevin is on the phone going, hey, where do we start here? And let's not forget, Montreal is a boatload of picks in this year's draft. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. There are 7 rounds. They have 12 picks. I cannot believe for a moment that Bergevin actually thinks he's going to make 12 picks in this upcoming draft. He's going to want to move some. They have 4 fourth round picks. They have 2 picks in the second round, 2 picks in the fifth round. They have some picks to move. If they believe that they're a playoff team. And again, Marc Bergevin has not used the term rebuild. He refuses to use it. He will use retooling and all those other verbs, but he refuses to say rebuild. So if you're not rebuilding, it means you have the opportunity. He always says, if I can make my team better via trade, I'll do it. Well, you can make yourself better here. You can make yourself a lot better by adding those players. By adding a Taylor Hall to your team, you get a lot better. And I mean, when was the last time Montreal had a legit scoring winger? Like Alexei Kovalev? Last time they made a trade to go out and get a scoring winger? Like, Drouin is good, but I don't think he's the scoring winger everybody thought he was. Or maybe he will never be that guy. He's off to a great start, right? Then he got hurt, and that sucks. And Max Domi's now playing center, and that's where they like him to play. And, you know, he's done super well there. That's fine. Brendan Gallagher is a hard-nosed, gritty winger. Like, he's not one of those goal scorers going to go out stupid crazy. He works hard for everything that he earns, but he's not a pure goal scorer. He scores those gritty, dirty goals. Thomas Tatar has filled in perfectly on that top line when he's gotten the call. And he has been an excellent surprise, and I love it. But I really do think here that if Montreal can get a deal done for Taylor Hall, it's going to be more of a question of does Hall want to come to Montreal? And, I mean, that's up to him to decide at that point. But those are the, I think I named six teams. One more. Doesn't matter. Those are the six teams that I have that I would be looking at as a possible suitor for Taylor Hall, based on what we know, that he's not willing, he's not ready to sign in New Jersey. I don't think he signs in New Jersey. I think they look to trade him before the deadline. I don't think this is a deadline deal that gets done. And those are some teams that might be interested in his services that can get the deal done. And that, ladies and gentlemen, wraps up the podcast for this week. As always, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for your comments, your praise about how much you love the podcast. Thank you to the people who also don't like it. It's fine. As I mentioned earlier, you can follow the podcast on Twitter at Slapshot Podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at FuzzyChris91. If there's something you want me to talk about on the podcast, slide into my DMs or slide into Slapshot Podcast's DMs as well. Shoot me your question. And answer it on the podcast as well. Again, subscribe, rate the podcast on your favorite platform. I love it. Like I said, I see the number of people who listen to it every week. The number keeps climbing every podcast that's out. It fills my heart with so much love that people listen to this and that they enjoy it, and that it's maybe part of your commute to work in the morning or on the way back. Maybe you're dropping your kids off at school. Maybe you're on the toilet taking a deuce and you're listening to this. I don't care where you do it. I don't care how you listen to it. It's just, it makes me really happy to know that you do. And like I said, if all goes according to plan in life, I'll be able to do one every single Wednesday. I hope so, because I would like to do this on a more regular basis. Not Monday, because Monday is tough, but every Wednesday is what I'm aiming for here. I'll see if I can stay true to that. If I do, we will see each other next Wednesday. Talk to you guys soon. Bye-bye.